Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. Full crew here in the Kill House. Big Randy has essentially moved down to Jax. DJ Pi is here. Tron is here. Patrick Reed is your 2018 Masters champion. Gentlemen, first question. What is Patrick Reed serving at the 2019 Champions Dinner?
Big question. I got to believe it's going to be steak-based, of some sort of steak. I did see a good tweet. Someone said he's going to cater Olive Garden, which it was a pretty good one, I thought. I don't know. Big Randy, what do you think?
Just like cow. Cow
yeah,
and
that's
potatoes.
What I'm yeah.
I think Cheesecake Factory. It's
yeah?
Like Nouveau Ooh. Riche.
I can see that.
Is he going to redesign the interior of his home with this $2 million that he just earned?
That's a good point. Is he going to redesign the green jacket to have those like black and white squares on the inside?
Black and white. It's going to be American flag on the inside.
True.
Are you kidding me? He's already.
Solly, I think you're overrating his outward aesthetics versus. You need to look at how he redesigned his house.
That's what I was basing
exactly.
it off of. Yeah.
Yeah.
He got that couch with the black and white squares was not good.
I think it's going to be hot dogs and hamburgers. I really think it might be
July
outdoor.
Cookout.
Yeah, it might be
Bud
a barbecue.
Diesel.
It might be a barbecue. I could see that. All right. So I feel like I root
It was a
for
weird
Reed.
Day today.
It was
a
weird
day.
I root for Reed.
A lot of people said a lot of things.
Mostly for the content purposes. He's very, very entertaining. I think he's one of the more fascinating characters. That being said, he's a very polarizing character. I actually think he's more liked in Europe probably than he is in the United States.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the Europeans kind of have the kind of polter hate towards him, but tend to respect him. I was kind of surprised. I did like a little like survey after the Ryder Cup in 16. Like, what do Europeans think? And they're like, man, whoever the guy that says that man hath been born from Zeus's balls, that has resonated with me.
Was that kind of like the anonymous player survey about the fight in the parking lot breaking out?
Yeah.
Which player would you help?
Yeah. So what was it? Bubba was the
NLU research department.
RIP Bubba.
Bubba was the winner of that survey, and Reed was second. So I mean,
correct.
Reed is not the most popular player, to say the least.
Reed for me is interesting in that, like, you know, everybody always makes the Poulter comparison and match play and, oh, you know, Ryder Cup, blah, blah, blah. I think Poulter kind of loses steam just because he hasn't really grown the legend kind of outside of that. You know, it turns into this one trick thing, and it's kind of, you know, it's almost kind of just like shallow, or kind of there's not much meat to it. I think that I agree with you.
Where your mouth is.
Yeah, and I agree with you that, you know, I root for Reed just because he's interesting and really fun to watch, you know, for better or worse. And I think every win that he gets just kind of grows that and almost like legitimizes that hype, you know, like the Ryder Cup will be better because he won the Masters.
Right.
That made sense.
His wins are huge. We talked about that before about, you know, obviously now the Masters, he's won WGC, he's won a FedEx Cup playoff event, which, you know, as far as, you know, little prestigious the FedEx Cup events have, they have some of the most, the strongest fields in golf. I mean,
yeah.
let's call it what it is. But he's not consistent. Like, he misses cuts. He goes on these runs. He doesn't belong in the Rory category or any JT or any of these guys. Definitely not like a Spieth level player, but he's now a major champion. Like, this is, he's vaulted into a new category.
Yeah.
I just don't know what that category is.
He's kind of carving out his own category.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to, I sense just in the room today was, I mean, we were definitely rooting for Spieth and the excitement and the comeback, but even on Twitter and the patrons at the crowd there was a bit of hesitation as he was coming up that 72nd hole.
He's a good heel.
He
right?
is.
And I think that's, you know, it's fun to root sometimes against the heel, but usually the heel loses.
Right.
Like in wrestling, right? Like in the biggest moment. And so I think, you know, with him winning and pulling through, it created a little bit of an awkward dynamic. But I'm kind of happy for him. I think if anything, you know, it sets up kind of a, hopefully this even encourages Reed to be even more preposterous and aggressive and, you know, confident.
Yeah, this emboldens him.
Yeah, I think that could, you know, long-term, big picture, I think it could be great for the game.
Can we just address that now the four defending major champions are all age 27 or younger and all American?
America first.
Putting America first.
Yeah.
I think that's not insignificant. Tron, you've been a little bit quiet so far.
Yeah, what's, it feels a little.
Hey, happy birthday, by the way.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Thanks, guys.
Flesh out, and we want to hear your full fleshed out thoughts.
Randy, on your point, it feels a little bit fatalistic that the heel wins this time. You know, it's like the world ends or something. It's, it's kind of depressing. But I'm going to try to uplift it here.
Please.
So Reed, I think his transgressions are well documented. You know, the Augusta State stuff, which it was laughable all week that people were referring to him as an Augusta local. it's absurd. I mean, I think the galleries out there were like, those were the smallest cheers I've ever heard for somebody walking up 18 at the Masters. But, you know, I think his transgressions are well documented, obviously, at UGA, at Augusta State. I've heard, you know, literally hundreds of stories from a variety of people, almost to a T, none of them good. I think what gets me is the steadfast refusal to acknowledge anything, or, you know, everything. He's just sheltered. Nobody wants to acknowledge it. Nobody wants, like, he doesn't want to say he's sorry for anything. He never wants to acknowledge anything and move forward. So it's always going to be lingering there versus, you know, anybody else, if they mess up, it's just, all right, hey, I'm going to apologize for it. We're going to move on and we're going to grow from it. And I can kind of become a comeback story versus that's never going to happen with Patrick Reed. He's always going to be the heel. He's always going to be the dickhead.
We went from heel to dickhead there.
Yeah, that was uplifting. Good call.
It's the year of rejoicing, guys.
No, but it's some people, you know, were chiming in today. They're like, wait, why do people dislike Patrick Reed? It's like, all right, yeah, you should do some Googling and get your, like, it's kind of a sad story that he doesn't talk to his parents anymore. His parents weren't there. And, you know, like you alluded to his transgressions at Georgia and everything. So there's plenty of reason for dislike out there. Like I said, I kind of am separating the human from the entertainment factor here. I don't necessarily for sure root for him as a human. But man, is it hilarious and fun to watch him just, what was the helicopter thing? I mean, that's so exaggerated.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like he just keeps mixing in all these things that just makes it so entertaining. And
I do find it ironic that he, of all people, he would win the tournament that prides itself on
totally
gentlemanly conduct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah. Which,
but he hits
I
a draw.
I kind of relish in that. You know?
It's kind of like John Daly winning at St. Andrews a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. I mean, like, he's far, like we touched on, he's like far from a consistent performer, but like whatever you want to call it, like this cockiness, confidence, or arrogance, whatever, he carries that like to legitimately increase his performance. Like, and I made the point back in 2016 when he played Rory, like, he's not on Rory's level. Rory knows that, but Reed doesn't, and that is what allows him to perform in these types of situations.
And I mean, he was just flat out nails today too. I mean, I know he shot one under, but I mean, there was almost no putts. You know, I don't think any of us were really rooting for him to win necessarily. You know, we all kind of wanted Rory or Spieth or whomever, but you know, there was no putts that he was standing over there that I think any of us thought he was going to miss. I mean, I was looking
in complete control.
Totally. He looked like he was in complete control because he made all the right shots at the right time. But I was looking at him, and he hit the same number of greens as Tiger this week.
Wow.
Which is kind of shocking that, you know, it's just when he needed to make putts, he needed to or make shots or whatever, you know, he made them. And he did get a couple, you know, everybody gets a couple breaks when they win. The ball not going in the water on 13 was a little, you know, that's a gift. The ball hitting the flagstick on 17 and not going, you know, 12, 15 feet past was a gift. But, you know, those things happen, and winner's the winner.
Yeah. You do give him a
winner's
lot
right
of
history.
That's right.
I want to acknowledge the fact that he kind of conquered the deep state and learned how to hit a fade or a cut.
I mean, I said this on the last show, I know, but like it was from the time I was, you know, 12 until kind of even like recently, I played a huge draw my whole life. And the idea of hitting a cut was just this giant exaggerated thing. And I've never seen a tour player like kind of go through like close to the same thing where it's like, draw, it's a cut, please cut. And he's just hitting these giant helicopter swings. I mean, it was like, it's pretty captivating to watch.
It's the opposite of flip it.
It is.
Flip it.
Yeah, exactly. Hold it.
Nice.
Yeah.
I go back to Saturday.
But it was good, by the way. I mean, he didn't really miss in the wrong spots, and that could have been the difference too. I mean, I know Andy Johnson, I think, said that on either in Twitter or in the newsletter. But I mean, I don't think he had broken 70 before this year at Augusta. And, you know, a big part of being able to do that is like those rock hard greens, especially the first couple of days, being able to hit a cut and land it soft in some of those pins and stuff is kind of the difference.
You alluded to how he hit as many greens as Tiger, but Augusta of all places, I think it's just so important to be in the right spot on the greens. And it didn't feel like he made miles of putts. I mean, he had so few putts, but I think you attribute that more to incredible ball striking. Because, I mean, he was in position for almost every shot we saw on TV. I felt like he was always in position. Never was it like really was he in a spot of bother.
I think this is one of those stats that may be a little bit misleading too. Is
totally, yeah.
You know, a fringe, you know, being on the fringe, right. Your point, Sally, being on a fringe on the right side of the green is akin to, you know, being 10 feet farther on the green.
I mean, I go back to Saturday though, and the Eagles on 13 and 15, totally. And it's recognizing. I don't know if greatness is the right word of that, but like I made the comparison on the live show. It's like if Phil does that, imagine how much we freak out, or if Tiger does that. I mean, so I think obviously, you know, it has different historical value if those guys do it. But the fact that he made that kind of run and had that performance to get the 3-shot lead that he needed all three of those shots for the lead that he took into Sunday.
I think CBS flashed a graphic either must have been when he got to number 8. I think when he teed off on 8 that his par 5 scoring was. Like 3.95 or something like that.
It was when he was on 2. He was 13
was.
Under.
Yeah, yeah.
12. The first 12 par fives, he was 13 under.
Yeah,
just, that's decent.
Just
that's,
silly.
That's gonna get it done.
I still think after Reed winning the Masters today, that the thing I'll remember the most about today was Spieth 64. Is that crazy?
No, it's not crazy. I mean, that was the most exciting thing of the day for sure.
Of the day or of the week?
Probably of the week.
Of the week.
Yeah,
I would say so. I mean, that was. And I mean, people are
the only other thing that made us kind of like, you know, we watched all 4 days together. The only other thing that made us kind of get up and jump around and run around the house was, I think, Sergio hitting 5 balls in the water.
Leisha's shot on Friday.
And Leisha's shot.
We'll get there. But
and Spieth then that was the only, you know, really consequential thing that made us do that.
That putt on 16. I mean, that was the loudest the Kill House got today. Easily.
His face afterwards.
Yeah. Are you kidding?
Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
He left one out there on 7, which was a bit disappointing. I mean, it's hard to nitpick a 31 on the front, but the 100-yard tee shot on 18, that hurt.
That's going to hurt you.
That one hurt a little bit.
But that's golf, you know.
That's gonna
I thought
happen.
He was
that's
just laying up to a number. 309, that's a good number, you know.
It's kind of a Mo Norman ball there.
That's usually the situation.
Gap wedge, 3-wood.
You play that shot as fast as possible so other groups can't see where you are. And usually if I hit one of those, I'm usually hoping like by the time we get to the green, you guys have forgotten about the
There's
top.
There's no ladies' tees at Augusta.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how he got a yardage down there. So, I mean, does the 18th really take away from, in your guys' minds, the performance that he put out today? Randy, what do you think?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I would have liked to have seen him finish at 9-under just to kind of be there, apply a little bit more pressure to Reed. But you know, it was a hell of a round. I, as you guys were talking, I was just thinking too, you know, 66 on Thursday is going to get forgotten a little bit too. Yeah.
He bogeyed 18 that day too.
Yeah. It was his tournament. But no, doesn't take away from me. I don't think so.
Everyone's going to start doing the thing I do, right? Where you just pick him every year. I mean, why wouldn't you? He's played in 5 Masters. And
that's
been,
what I mean. Thursday and today showed for sure. Is when he flexes, I mean, he's just.
He's been beaten.
He's surgical.
14 golfers have beaten him in 5 Masters. That's absurd. His first 5 Masters.
And my favorite stat, getting back to Thursday, when he finished Thursday with the lead, that's now 9 times in his career he's held the lead at Augusta. At the end of the day, since 1992, he is tied for the most
with Tiger.
At 9 with Tiger. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah,
that's preposterous.
Kind of amazing.
Ignorant.
You know what's crazy? He and Reed have the same amount of green jackets. Like that doesn't seem right.
Like Jordan should legitimately have 4,
right?
By now.
I mean, is it? So we had this question.
I'm being dead serious. Yeah.
Greller should have 1. Shout out to Greller. My dude, Alpha.
Speaking of Greller, we didn't get to hear the conversation on 13. I know we're going to talk about CBS later, but that was like
we're going to get CBS.
That was tough.
We're going
to lead. That was tough to not hear the conversation on 13 between 4-iron and hybrid and wind and where am I missing and what am I doing?
I'm going to muzzle myself and just tell me when to tap. On that one.
All right, guys, we are 3 months into the new year. That's 3 months we've been playing the 2018 Chrome Soft golf ball. Are you guys Chrome Soft or Chrome Soft X guys?
I play whatever Johnny gives me from the tour truck.
I play Chrome Soft. you know, Chad and the guys have hooked us up with a pretty big box for the inaugural Thirsty Cup this week. We had 20 guys at Sweetens Cove. Team DJ versus Team Tron, and I think a big thing was the alternate shot. My team was kind of gelling all using the Chrome Soft. Tron, it seemed like you guys were kind of working some other product in there and maybe having a hard time.
Yeah, we were lost until we got to singles, and then we just absolutely crushed you guys.
That's true.
But yeah, we had some guys playing other brands. We really struggled to get it dialed in on the alternate shot stuff, and then kind of congealed once everybody was playing their Chrome Soft, playing their own ball.
You guys have heard me talk about the 2018 Chrome Soft, why it's different than the 2017 ball. This ball, the Callaway has infused the outer core with graphene. This allows them to engineer a thinner outer core and a significantly larger inner core. This means you're going to get softer feel with less spin off the tee and more spin around the greens. I promise you, this ball is worth testing out. You guys are going to see the difference. I'm still amazed at how far it's going. I'm an iron longer on almost every shot. So go to CallawayGolf.com for more information on the ball that changed the ball. Now let's get back to our Masters recap. BMC, Money BMC has the question, over under on Spieth green jackets now. Total, I say. You're supposed to, all right. If you're ever going to send in a question, send in the number with the over under. Don't rely on us to come up with the over under. I'll set it at 3.5.
That's what I was thinking in my mind.
I think he wins 4.
That's a good 3.5 is a good number.
Right.
I'll take the under just because I think you guys are going to take the over.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as he's proved that, you know, it's hard to close it. They are hard to win. Gun to my head, I think I'm taking over though.
I'm taking over.
On that same note, I think this is, I'm not sure if you had this one tagged for later in the podcast, but who wins the career Grand Slam first? Rory, Phil, or Jordan?
Do any of them?
I mean, you guys are all looking at me. I think Jordan. I think Jordan's my guy, man. I think he, like, not when he wants to, I was going to say when he wants to be, he's the best player in the world, but I think he just, all things being equal to all people, if we're looking at the best player in the world as like a 5-year window sort of thing, I think he's the best player in the world.
I still think we're pending the best to come from Spieth. Like,
I agree.
Really,
yeah,
actually,
that's
putting
a good way
it all together.
To say it.
So
yeah,
I think this was an interesting year because I feel like his game is so much less predicated upon hitting the ball well.
What do you mean?
Like, his mental game and his course management and everything is so strong that it's less incumbent upon him to just flush his irons or you know, kill it off the tee or putt well. Like, he's always going to be right on the cusp. Whereas if Rory's not on, he's off.
Right.
Whereas Jordan's always on because he's got all these other things working for him.
I just think I'll make the point until I'm in the grave that his ball striking is so underappreciated. And this year he's actually kind of really struggled with putting, and he's legitimately one of the maybe at worst 10 best iron players in the game. He just doesn't get he doesn't have the beautiful swing. And like,
that's what I think. Yeah. That's what I think made me so pumped about watching him on Thursday.
Right.
And that's what Augusta does so well, and really all the majors do so well, is you never, for the rest of the year, you never really get too excited about watching a guy hit it, you know, 12 feet left of the pin below the hole like you do it at majors, right, where you're like, oh my God, that's so fucking good what he just did.
Yeah.
And just, like, that's yeah, what Augusta brings out and all the rest of the majors bring out, and Spieth does it as well as anybody.
I feel like the last 2 months everybody's been asking, like, what's wrong with him? What's wrong with him? And it's been a conscientious decision from him to basically get in the lab and
try to peak.
And, like, you know, and work on things and perfect things and improve instead of just resting on, hey, I had a good year last year, let's keep it rolling. You know, I think there's something to be said for that.
Yeah. Moving on, Rory.
Hold on, guys.
Go ahead. Sorry.
My heart wanted to answer that question.
Okay.
It's Mickelson.
Yeah.
This year.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He has to answer the question. Yeah. Mickelson's going to win the U.S. Open.
Absolutely.
Okay. I was going to say the same thing.
I refuse to believe we'll live in a world without Mickelson winning
the
U.S.
Mickelson,
Open.
I think Mickelson, Cantlay, and Leishman are all going to share the U.S. Open this year.
Perfect.
I mean, I wasn't super filled with confidence in what we saw from Phil coming in this week.
Well,
coming in at the top of his game.
He had the kinesio tape on his wrist today.
He was kind of like a poor man's Spieth this week, where the first round was super solid. Obviously, he had a good number today, shot a 67, and, you know, was just horrendous starting on number 9 on Friday. And, you know, as it tends to do for Phil sometimes, it gets away from him and some big numbers creep in. But, yeah, he's just going to have to conjure some magic, I think. I'm It's a hard pick. I hope he.
It's a good. It's a great question. It's one that's going to be circulating for quite some time.
And we've got the U.S. Open going to Pebble next year. Is that right?
Yeah. Spieth.
Spieth has to win two more. Too.
Well, Spieth's going to win Pebble kind of actually.
That's kind of the deal too. Is that's kind of the equalizer.
What do you mean Spieth's got to win two more?
Spieth's got to win a PGA, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's got to win a PGA. Oh shit! He's already.
Yeah, he's got three.
God, he's got
yeah,
three.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Many people. So I still.
He's got three.
I still
and he
think,
should have seven.
I still think. I still eight. Think DJ won at Chambers.
How old is
Bay.
He?
He's what? 24. 24.
Jeez. God, I think he might win seven Masters. I'm gonna.
Wow.
It's a lot.
I was kind of disappointed with his. You know, before he even went to the PGA last year, said this is going to be the hardest one for me to win because of the setup and everything. I was like. Is the PGA even like known for any specific kind of setup? It's just like a normal tournament. I don't like him like.
It's like winning the John Deere Classic,
right?
A really long John Deere.
Yeah. So
the only problem I have
he's kind of a low key grinder though.
It's true.
Yeah. You know, I think Spieth likes it when it's
tougher,
very difficult.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, moving to May too, you might bring in some Texas PGAs.
Tejas.
We'll see.
I don't think they're scheduled to go to Texas anytime in the next 10 years.
We'll see.
Do you know? First time hearing of this. Are we ready to talk about the Rory disappointment?
Well, so the last thing I was going
to
say about
think we're ever going to be ready to talk.
No. The last thing I was going to say about predicting the Masters, and it kind of ties into the Rory thing, is I feel like people tend to get out over their skis a little bit when they're assigning these Masters winners, because if you go back even at what all of us have said over the, you know, whatever past 5 years, you have a tendency to throw out like, oh, you know, Phil's going to win another one, and Tiger, he's going to win another. Jordan's going to win seven. Bubba's going to win, you know, five.
We're doling out a lot of titles here.
Rory, you know, it's a perfect course for Rory. He's probably going to win six of these things. It's like, well, okay, well, that's the next 25 years. Like, I don't know, you know. I don't think it's going to play
what
out
was
like
Tiger's,
that. Nobody ever wins as many as people
somebody
think
who's with a yeah, laptop. What was Tiger's record? How many Masters has Jordan played in now? Five?
This was his fifth, yeah.
What was Tiger's record through five Masters? Two wins?
Well, he won as a professional.
As a professional.
So he won in 97. He won in 2001 and 2002. So he won three of his first six. Two of his first five. So he had two green jackets.
How did he finish in 98 and 99?
98, I think he was...
Here we go, I got it.
You got it.
Yep, so 97, first one as a pro, obviously won. So he went win, T8, T18, fifth, win, T15, T22, win, T3, T2, second. And then he's finished.
I don't think Spieth's record is far off of that.
No.
You know?
He had seven top sixes in a row, which is pretty good.
Plus Tiger didn't have to deal with Baghdad Jerry... In his left-handed,
that's true.
Fade,
that's true.
You know?
True.
Very true. Okay, Rory, are we finally ready to do this? Not mad, just disappointed. I think is the general
that's
consensus.
Perfect.
Yeah,
yeah.
I thought it was going to go way differently today. I thought I picked him last night on the live show. I thought Rory was going to run him down. It looked like after one and a half holes that he had run him down. The missed putt on two. Do we really think that's what derailed him today? I kind of refuse to believe that.
I don't think it's what derailed him. I just think it's what kind of gave us the message that, hey, maybe his game's not quite ready for prime time or not quite.
Yeah, I mean, he came back and he hit, you know, four is probably the hardest hole in the golf course, you know, maybe 4 and 11, but he came back and stuck it to what, five, inside 5 feet on four. I mean, I think he still had some fight left, but I don't know. I didn't want to vocalize it because I didn't want it to be true, but I got to look at the stats. But I feel like every time he's kind of been in this position, especially at Augusta, but whenever he's up there and you think he's really gonna just come out and buck his head, he's kind of laid some eggs recently. And I don't know, watching him just kind of block, wipe that ball and almost miss that ball off the first, I was kind of like, ugh.
I think the most concerning thing
was, I just don't think
he's
gonna go out and like step on the gas and do this.
How badly he hit it off the tee in kind of the middle part of the round.
Yeah. It may have been the camera angle when they showed a slow mo of that first swing off the first tee. I legitimately like almost whiffed the ball. Like it was so far out on the toe. Yeah. But I mean, coming back at two and stuffing that shot, I mean, I got a driver 8-iron or something on number two, which is just absurd. It felt like that was going to, and I don't know, it felt like, you know, I said this, but thought he really actually wanted some kind of vengeance for Hazeltine and kind of thought, he made some comments about the course setup at Hazeltine and how, you know, he would have preferred more rough and the, you know, obviously the European team comment about where the pins were set up. And I think he kind of looked at, that easy setup and thought that neutralizes some of his advantage with Reed, and that's what allowed Reed to kind of stay on the same field as him. And you put him in a back, you put him on a golf course, a major championship golf course on Sunday, that Rory would wipe the floor with him. And that's what I thought would happen. And it didn't. I mean, again, I think historically we're going to look at Rory and Reed in very different ways. But man, that's twice in huge moments that Reed has gotten the better of Rory. This one by a lot.
So Rory's kind of starting to seem like, and I mean this in the most kind of complimentary, genial way possible, a little bit more like Arnie, where Arnie had some really kind of, you know, heartbreaking collapses and heartbreaking performances down the stretch in majors, and probably should have won twice as many majors as he did, and hit the ball a long way past everybody else, and was extremely well-liked and well-adjusted and, you know, just a great ambassador for the game. And I feel like Rory's very similar to that. And when he wins, he runs away from the field and boat races everybody, but he hasn't shown a propensity to grind.
Right.
And I think that's extremely concerning.
I don't know. This may be kind of counteractive to everything I just said, but I'm actually more confident after this week that Rory's going to win a Masters than I was going into it. Even after the performance today.
I still think he wins one.
Yeah, I mean, all the pieces are there.
Right.
You know, it's just getting them to all line up at the same time.
Right. It's not like it's a golf course he can't play or shots out there he can't hit or anything like that. And and it's different. It was different the weeks that, you know, we watched him grind for 3 days and then shoot the final round 65 to finish T5, which is like, all right, I never felt like you were in contention here. Being in the final group, again, lessons to be learned from it. I think he said he learned from being in the last group Saturday in 2016 with Spieth. He's obviously learned from what happened in 2011, and there'll be lessons to be learned about this today. So I'm my confidence hasn't dipped that he will win one.
With Rory, I just don't feel like I don't think everything's clicked for him for 4 days at Augusta. You know, I mean, that's obvious, but if you look at his other major wins and you look at kind of the arc of his career, last year was kind of a lost year. I think he's still getting back into the flow of things. So I think the best is yet to come this year, and I think next year is probably a more realistic interpretation, because he's still, I mean, for all intents and purposes, he's still getting used to new equipment. He's still getting used to married life.
A little bit of, I mean, this is so intangible too, but like just getting a little confidence back too. You know, I mean, he had the week at Bay Hill, which we kind of have talked about on the podcast or the live show, but I mean, you know, it's almost that kind of unsustainable, makes every putt he looks at, you know, sort of thing.
You almost need to validate that win, right?
Yeah, and I think coming out this week and just being in the hunt and the final group and all that stuff, I mean, he seems like the kind of guy that, you know, it doesn't just pop up out of nowhere for him. You know, he needs to kind of build towards something big, and, you know, hopefully kind of getting a couple more of these will help with that.
And he talked a lot about it in Abu Dhabi, where he was saying, you know, he was like, in the past, you know, last couple of years when I've played well, like, I've been hurt and I just couldn't practice, and I felt sheepish when I played well because I felt like I didn't truly deserve to those results. I was coasting by on natural talent when really, you know, I feel like once he gets an ample amount or a sizable amount of hard work in, the results are going to pay dividends. I don't think he's there yet though.
It's interesting to me how, so he had 3 third place finishes in majors before he won one. And since he won his first major 2011 U.S. Open, he hasn't had like a close call. He's won 4 of them. He's won 2 of them by wide margins, 2 by close margins. And then the rest have been, he has no runner-ups, no third-place finishes. He has a 4th-place 2015 at the Masters, which was backdoored. He doesn't have like the close calls. And I don't know what that means. I don't know if it means anything.
And even the top 10s that he gets, it seems like he's coming.
Right.
He's either fading fast or coming from way back and shooting 65 on Sunday.
I don't mean this in a bad way. He may be a front runner. Like he's just when he's in the lead and
he's either on or off.
He closes and takes care of it. So
Randy, what's your Rory take?
I think you guys have covered it sufficiently.
Well, save it, because the next topic you're going to have to carry us.
Yeah. Real quick, just...
I don't have much to add here.
You know, we kind of touched on it on the live show, but which we keep referencing the live show. If you haven't watched it, tune in on Twitter every Sunday after the last putt drops. Get involved. Yeah. But from a week-long perspective, who was the forgotten man this week?
Week-long?
Week-long.
I think Justin Rose.
He may have been the forgotten man.
I think he shot 4 rounds...
He shot even 70, 71, 69, finished T12.
I think I maybe saw him hit five or six shots.
I saw him hit any shots.
I mean, man, for a two-time major champion, I didn't see Bubba Watson. He finished T-fit. I didn't see him hit a lot of shots. I had to watch him putt a lot.
Yeah, we watched him putt a lot.
Which I don't want to do that. I want to watch
him putt
shots.
Into a bunker, which yeah, is,
that was fantastic.
I think I saw him play 13 or putt on 13 three different days, and none of those 3 days they showed his second shot.
He's maybe has the most famous tee shot ever on that hole. I didn't watch him hit any tee shots on that hole this week, but Forgotten Man kind of will tie into CBS, I think, more so than anything. But we got to talk about the runner-up. We haven't even mentioned him yet, I don't think. Mr. Richard Flower. Randy, there was a line, like a little line,
the
a line of sweat on our brand new couches that looked a lot like from where you were sitting today.
Swamp.
You were sweating this one out. I mean, your thoughts.
That's a little bit of fake news. I think I was comfortable. I think my take is,
Hold on, I'm going to crack a beer for this.
I contend it was a little bit of a backdoor second. I'm not sure how much he was in it.
Shot no. 65, 67 on the weekend.
He did, but he was one over through seven today. I think if he gets off to, well, obviously if he gets off to a better start, he's, you know,
yeah,
he's in it. But just as far as applying pressure, really having a chance, you know, he just kind of ran out of holes. And I think that's attributed to his start.
I think he'd be getting a lot more flack if he started hot and then played the last like 7-1 over. Like, I think it's more impressive that he birdied six of the last 11.
He did battle.
He did battle.
He bucked.
He's a good player. He's a good player. I've never claimed he's not a good player.
Well, what is your? Can you clarify your take?
Yeah. Let's get this on the record.
So Randy's going to be a lot more of a staple on this podcast. So let's get this laid out and let's do it now.
I wish we could roll back the tape. if you guys could. Do you guys remember what you said at the start of this podcast about Patrick Reed?
Yeah.
About what this win does for him?
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't put him in Rory's class. It doesn't put him in Spieth's class. It doesn't, you know, he's not there. He's not here. Well, you know, he's clearly now above Ricky in terms of career accomplishments.
Definitely.
Totally.
But yet, you know, who gets fawned over, you know, every telecast?
I mean, who has the Tax Slayer endorsement, though?
Who was being put in the Big Four a few years ago? I just think my honest to God take from the beginning.
I mean, Reed kind of put himself in the Big Five a couple of years ago,
and that's fair. And that's fair. My honest to God take from you know a few years ago was my whole thing has been his reputation has always outpaced his on course results, and. And I think in conjunction with that, you know, gosh, you just get a ton of that marketing, a ton of the, you know, the high tops, the orange, there's a lot that's getting thrown in my face, which I don't like it.
Subprime mortgages really piss Randy off.
I'm not picking up what he's putting down all the time. So that's my, you know, that's my.
That's where you're coming from.
That's my original take.
And I believe the term was late stage capitalism.
So I glossed some late stage capitalism, Rick, this weekend.
Post industrialist Rick.
Yeah, I think he's a little over monetized. I think he's, you know, preying on this like fast fashion trends which are just horrendous for the environment. I think it's cynical. I think it's, you know. It's one of my favorite late stage capitalism quotes. I'll read it for you. It comes from the novel Bleeding Edge, and the guy goes, "Late capitalism is a pyramid racket on a global scale." And
there you have it.
And I just kind of feel like that's Ricky's game a little bit.
And
that's his reputation.
That's not a mean spirited take.
And that's nothing against him personally. Everything I've heard about him personally, I've never met the guy. He's a great guy to hang out with, and so I want to make that clear. It's nothing personal. It's just as a golf fan, which I am, that's how I feel. And it makes it more fun week to week when he is a little bit of a heel for me.
I also want to make note that he's clearly a like Reed gets a lot of flack for being a thief from his old, you know, the old stories, but nobody's talking about the farmers commercial with Ricky.
Stolen turf.
He steals the sod. Yeah. He's hanging it up in his place.
So did I?
And insurance fraud too.
Did I do a good job laying that out? Is that?
Yeah, totally. I think there's a lot of people feel the same way, probably.
Randy, one of your best points of you've ever made. I think about this sometimes when I lay down at night. Is is that Ricky's got work to do to get Martin Keimer's career?
Yeah,
that resonated with me.
And Martin Keimer might be the forgotten man.
Perennially, like tragically underrated player historically, but. No, that makes total sense. All right, I'm gonna ask you guys answer as quick as you can.
Hold on. I'm gonna make a Ricky comparison here.
I think I got one too. Good.
So Ricky, he looked like a Tennessee Volunteers football coach today, and I'm gonna say that his career thus far has been akin to the Butch Jones era.
Butch Jones, yeah.
He just flashy recruiting, a lot of the right things. Yeah, a lot of sexy motivational speeches and stuff. You know. Program seems like it's trending in the right direction, but is there a foundation there?
I think it's fair to ask. I think, you know.
And a lot of orange, too, obviously.
Yeah.
I think the margin's just so small, and that, like, if Reed yaks that 3.5-footer and they go to a playoff and he's the major championship winner, it's a coronation. And all that stuff is kind of out of his control. Like, he got beat by one guy by one shot. It's like, I think, so what I was going to ask is, answer as fast as you can, how many top five do you think Rick has at majors?
Probably six, seven, eight, two at each of them.
Jesus,
like that's performing really well.
I mean,
on
DJ wrote the seminal piece on Ricky,
but this is where
PGAtour.com.
Thanks, man.
This is where you like people. I feel like guys can get punished for performing really well and not winning. It almost gets held against them more than not performing.
Yeah, and it's the whole thing. Like you gotta, you know, how well do you have to play in order to be labeled a choker? Basically,
right.
You know, it's kind of the same.
Or how well do you have to play to deserve the endorsements? On the flip side,
yeah.
You know,
I don't want to sound like I'm waffling here because Randy, I see where you're coming from for sure. At the same time, you know, I'm not going to fault anybody for putting money in the pocket. You know, if somebody's willing to offer it to him, you know, it's hard to say no to.
Hashtag Team Wasp.
But that doesn't mean we have to like it, right. You know? So it's...
I feel like that's my choice.
Yeah, it's a complex issue.
Randy doesn't like being sold to.
I was going
to
say he's kind of almost...
Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's Randy.
Yeah. He almost has... if you were going to compare him to a band, he almost kind of has some Imagine Dragons vibes, you would say.
Oh, God.
which he's a fan, which was quoted... From the 18th tower at Augusta National
if
today.
If McCord got
Nick
banished
Fowler quoted
for,
an Imagine Dragons song.
McCord
the
got
hell
banished
kind of
for
world are we living in?
Talking about bikini wax.
Yeah.
Nick Fowler should get like
25 to life.
I mean, yeah, that's egregious.
Yeah.
He should get a jacket taken away.
Welcome to the new age. To the new age.
Twice.
Yeah.
Disgusting. We're gonna get to. We still got some things to cover before CBS. How long have we made it in here? Are we adequately covered with Richard Flower? Well, did you guys want to make it?
The question is, are you guys? I mean, my stance isn't changing.
I think it's like, you know,
until he wins, I will gladly.
I'm not gonna consider him an elite player until he wins.
Well, do you think there's some
majors?
You know,
he's a really, really, really good player. I don't think he's a great player yet.
We're all probably a little young to make the comparison here, but are there some Mickelson comparisons here?
For sure.
No. Well,
Mickelson, I think Phil just won too many other tournaments.
Mickelson won a lot.
Right? Yeah.
But that's where I was going to make that comment. And what's Ricky, 28, 29? But
29, I believe.
Mickelson, again, Mickelson had a different career leading up to winning his first major, but Mickelson didn't win his first major. He was 33. Like four more.
Totally.
It's so easy to forget about
Sergio.
The buildup. Yeah.
It happens.
It takes these guys sometimes a long time.
I think the dream scenario is he starts picking these things off and everyone can just be happy for him.
Yeah. including Randy.
Including Randy.
I think he'll get one. I think he'll get a major. I kind of see him on a Fred Couples DL3 Jim Furyk trajectory.
I'll tell you what the comment
might be. That's probably a Hall of Fame career. He's got to win some more tour events. So that's kind of the elephant in the room a little bit, overlooked.
What does he have, seven?
I think the comp might be...
Yeah.
First time hearing of this.
Well, he's got some, you know, he's got some Euro.
Yeah, that's true, I guess.
Guys, Payne Stewart.
I'm a globalist. I see him all the same.
Payne Stewart won two majors.
But Payne Stewart didn't win a major until he was...
Payne Stewart won three majors?
19, yeah, he won three majors.
Really?
Two U.S. Opens, one PGA.
That's right.
Oh, wow.
He didn't win a major until August of 1989, at which point he was 32 years old.
Well, that was like forever. That was the statistical age golfers always peaked at. Yeah. I mean, Adam Scott was 32, 33.
Payne Stewart had 4 wins prior to winning that first major. He won one in 89. He won the 91 U.S. Open. He won the 99 U.S. Open, obviously.
That's interesting. That could be the comp.
I think that, you know.
I like that.
Yeah, I like that too.
And they were both kind of distinct.
Just from a dressing standpoint.
Distinctive
too,
in their
yeah.
own regard as well.
That's
so
interesting.
I think that might be.
That's a good comparison.
But, I think Ricky might be slightly above that just because the depth is a little bit stronger these days. But
Ricky even wore the knickers at Pinehurst.
That's right.
There you have it.
Of course he did.
We're about 40 minutes in. This might be, of any of the golf podcasts, I think we'll make it the longest without having a Tiger mention. Did we have a mention? It might have been a mention. We haven't talked about him yet, though. For
I don't being even want to talk about him. Like we're going to talk about him plenty this year. I think we got a lot of good things to come.
I think it's worth addressing, definitely. I mean, he came in the tournament as a favorite. And
guys, he drove the shit out of the ball this weekend.
I think he drove it well when it was too late.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. But I think that was really encouraging, though.
Yeah. I mean, could see him playing really, like, you know, we're Jacksonville-centric, obviously, but I could see him playing really well to players.
Oh, yeah.
The way he's kind of picking things apart, I can see that.
Hitting 3 irons off tees. Yeah.
Flattish Florida courses that he's done well at so far this season. I think it was, you know, in hindsight, we got a little excited. Everyone did. But I thought it was validated. But going to bent grass greens and a totally hilly, different golf course than what he's had.
Yeah, he just
played.
Missed it so many bad spots those first couple days.
It just wasn't
with
tight enough.
Missing greens with wedges and just kind of.
Yeah. Just needs to tighten.
Just tight. Legally, tight. We can't tell him to lose just, weight, but just tight.
Just tighten.
Just tighter.
But
I'm pissed he's not playing Heritage. Too.
That would be sweet. I think my man needs some rest.
He's going to get back in the gym.
He needs to get in the gym.
That was, like, he goes out of his way to say that.
Yeah. Some chatter about from some people I talked to about him limping around a little bit, like looking a little tentative with the back. I didn't see it.
That.
Did you guys see it? Okay.
Even if I mean, it's hard to. I don't know.
Right. I think it's a kind of a
500 miles away watching on TV. It's
imagined
hard to,
but Phil, along the same lines, we was a bit of a disappointment this week. I think it was the first time that he and Tiger have finished outside the top 10, like both finished outside the top 10 in like 20 years or something like that.
I don't even know if Phil was a disappointment this week. He was just. I mean, I was excited for him going in, but that driver he hit off the deck on Saturday.
Totally avenged his 79.
That was pornographic.
I thought he was priming to play Knox on Sunday after whiffing on that first hole. I thought he was going to throw up an 80 and make sure he got in that Knox match.
I think the hard thing with Phil is, and Tiger, I guess, as well, is, you know, coming into this week, we all kind of said the same thing that, you know, there's probably 12 guys that are basically favorites at this thing, and there's all these big names. You know that not all of them are going to be there or going to, you know, justify the hype or whatever. But, I mean, the people who are in the top, that top kind of 10, 12, whatever, I mean, Reed, Fowler, Spieth, Rahm, Bubba, Stenson, McIlroy, Dustin, I mean, those guys were, like, all there. It's just, you know, all 12 guys are not going to be there. It's just, you know, it's just not how it goes, so... You know.
We got a pretty Dream Masters,
totally.
I think, for, you know.
Yeah, it's probably...
You had a great point on the live show about kind of, you know, what a leaderboard like this means, I guess, maybe. Is that
right.
How you said it?
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say. It's a post-Phil Tiger leaderboard. Like this could be the leaderboard in the year 2026.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in good hands. That's what made the Tiger and Phil resurgences so interesting is like 2014, the game was kind of in a weird place, and it wasn't like it is currently. So, but having those guys added back into the mix of already a lot of excitement going on is awesome. And like them dropping out meant we still got a great match. We didn't have a Trevor Immelman year. We didn't have a Zach Johnson year.
Yeah,
so.
it doesn't feel you don't feel fulfilled unless you get kind of a passing of the torch.
Right.
Totally. Yeah. Now, we need before it all ends. We need, you know, a Tiger or Phil or Tiger and Phil. Kind of duel on Sunday with one of these young guys.
Tiger has passed the torch to Reed. I think it's very clear.
I think Reed hit him in the back and stole the torch, maybe.
Guys, going back to the Payne Stewart Ricky Fowler comp, Payne Stewart lost 5 playoffs from 1984 to 1989 for tour wins, too. So he was kind of, you know, had trouble closing the deal. He lost a bogey on one of the playoffs.
Not
so
good.
You know, but that kind of feeds into the Ricky can't close thing too, where it's kind of just like, hey, it's a game of numbers.
Yeah. It's almost that he like I don't think it's that he can't close. It's almost like he won't close. But it's like he obviously
think
can.
Think it's a conscientious.
I don't know. It's just something like he definitely can. I have a hard time.
It like, just saying like,
doesn't
close
happen sometimes.
After six birdies in the last 11 holes, I have such a hard time with it being close.
I don't think anybody can say you can't close after the players. The one
right.
year.
That's what I mean.
Absurd.
I mean, what did he shoot today on the back? 1, 2. I mean, 32 on the back, yeah. Bogey free, 32 on the back. I mean, if Reed made like all of this is so. It's so context
so
driven,
arbitrary,
right? Like
if
Reed makes a bogey on 11 and 14, then rookie looks like he came in and made this late charge and shut the door. You know,
dude, how many guys have shot 14 under at Augusta?
And he birdied the last when he needed to birdie the last. So I mean, it's like,
yeah, that was just serious.
I think he might just be super unlucky.
Can we talk about Rahm a little bit?
I don't know, right?
I feel like Rahm might be
kind
of
create
the...
your own luck.
Billy Zane.
No, I don't know. Yeah, he's. Yeah, I've said my piece.
Rahm might kind of be the forgotten man too. Is he still number three in the world right now?
I think he might be four. I mean, yeah, I think he is three. I think Spieth is four.
And I don't feel like he really played that well this week. And he was.
They
right,
didn't show
he went,
much of.
And
him
he was
the first
right
two
there.
Rounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They whiffed on that in the first couple of days. I mean, he made the big charge Saturday.
And I guess, yeah. In fairness to CBS, he did shoot a 75 on Thursday. But then, yeah, talk about back in that, you know, coming back, 68, 65, 69, and he missed some shots coming in today.
Right. He made it interesting there for a while.
Yeah.
I feel like I'll be surprised if Rahm doesn't win a major this year.
I think he wins PGA. I think he wins Belle Reve. Shout out to Big Leash, huh? I mean,
absolutely.
He didn't, you know, he finished strong on the back nine today, but kind of got the drop from coverage treatment.
Yeah,
didn't
have 35 of his last seven today.
Didn't have a great Saturday, but man, I think the loudest the Kill House got the entire week was his shot on 15. Coming after his tee shot, CBS says they're gonna have to lay up. He's not gonna be able to get there. 235 yards, hooking around the tree to left flag, stuffing it, and making eagle.
I believe Tron called it one of the best moments of his life.
It was a triumph of the human spirit.
Of Tron's life, not of Leishman's life.
You're right, right. Of Tron's life.
It was awesome.
I thought Maddie was going to rip the bib off and just flash the no laying up t-shirt after that shot. I mean, I don't know. It's we joke about that being awesome, but like to flash that kind of stones with everything on the line. I know it's Friday, but man, I mean, like this is what you prepare for, the tournament you prepare for, to hit that shot under that. And the announcers are saying he has to lay up from there, and that didn't even sound like it was a consideration for them.
Well, Tron, you'll probably get into this a little bit more too, but you know, we're talking to Maddie kind of throughout the week about course conditions and stuff, and you know, watching what happened to Leish, and granted he didn't make any putts yesterday and kind of didn't do himself any favors, but watching what happened to him kind of shows a little bit, I think, of what happens when the course gets soft and kind of what starts to happen.
There's
no fire in it, and that's like when guys like him, I think, who are just like these stellar iron players. Mm-hmm. And you know, granted, Spieth flexed all over everybody today as a great iron player as well. But you know, that's kind of what I love about major championships is just watching these guys have to hit their irons to surgical spots. And when the course gets kind of soft, you lose a little bit of that. And so some people were making the point about like the sub-air system is like, you know, everybody says Augusta can basically create
like
whatever golf course.
God.
Yeah, they can kind of create whatever golf course they want. And you know, we saw kind of a softer little, I don't know, tamer or a little, you know, more kind of birdie conducive, which maybe that's what they're going for. I'm not really sure, but
it's just less interesting when it's wet.
Well, they can control how firm the greens play, but they don't have sub air all over the property.
No,
right?
That's what I'm saying.
So you can't have a super soft.
There were a lot of shots even today, like, you know,
I expected it to be drier today.
Yeah, like the shot that Reed hit in 15, I just remember, like, kind of sticks with me, was, you know, kind of trickling off the back, and you see that, like, earlier in the week, you know, that's the one that runs all the way to the bottom of the hill and leaves you with this just absolutely terrifying shot coming back straight down the hill. And so just stuff like that is what you kind of lose from the first 2 days, which I guess it gets traded.
A lot more margin for error.
It gets traded off with eagles and birdies, which is probably what they want, but it's kind of a tough trade, I guess.
But the point, and Troy made this point earlier, but that the birdies are still there, right? But your margin for your bad shots, you just get punished more harshly for your bad shots when
you get
it's more
exposed.
Firm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I think they did a good job of not firming the greens up too much with the rest of the course being soft, because it doesn't make for a good tournament, I don't think, when like the run up areas are super soft and then the greens are firm. You don't give guys even options on how to play it, right? So
here's a question, it may be a little bit abstract. At what point does Augusta just put a dome?
within the next 50 years, will they play within a dome?
Well,
I don't think that's abstract at all.
No, I do think the sub-air thing is a tad overrated. I know they got a lot of rain yesterday, but everybody acts like it's just them playing God with the course, and it's not. Like, the course played vastly different Saturday and Sunday than it did earlier in the week, and I know that helps. But also, I just think there's just too much rough and second cut everywhere too, to where when the course does play softer, it plays even tamer than it would have otherwise, because there's all this longer grass and the ball doesn't roll out in bad spots, like, for instance, behind 15.
It's possible that the increased number of commercials could be going into the Dome Fund.
Mm. Here we
I'd be all for that.
Fingers crossed.
We were saying it when we were there on Wednesday, how cool it would be if they could kind of Truman Show that place. Yeah. And,
Christoph.
Like, I'm guessing there's some green jackets that weren't really psyched about Reed. It'd be, they crank up the wind on 17 and 18. And
it's like a mix between Truman Show and Hunger Games.
Yeah, maybe even manipulate a couple of the greens as he's playing to him.
Earthquakes.
I think that'd be great. Mm-hmm.
All the conspiracy theories that would come from the Reed kit for that one.
No doubt.
That's a great transition. Talking about commercials, straight to CBS. It's time. We made it like 50 minutes. We made it a long way into this one.
Let's keep it tight. We've made our point here.
Our piece.
Yeah. I think DJ's on the take from CBS.
I think there's one take to be had here, and that is pivotal moment in the tournament. Jordan Spieth. Everybody knows that he flared it out to the right. I would use another word in any other context. flared it out to the right on 13. CBS goes to commercial. They come back from commercial. While they're at commercial, Spieth hits the second shot into 13 after a long discussion, conversation, debate with Greller, where about club selection,
which kind of just proved that they are probably the best player caddy duo out there right now.
Which Faldo probably would have talked over anyway, but we'll let that go. So everybody's watching this on Masters.com or whatever, but I'm not because I want to watch it on the big TV. I don't want to I want one. Yeah.
We're all kind of watching together.
Yeah. And it's like, I get the whole streaming thing. Everybody's like, yeah, just watch it on Masters.com. I'm like, we're in a big room together. We're not
huddled around a computer.
Yeah, you want to watch the main telecast. And then they come back from commercial. They show a montage. I wouldn't call it a highlight package because Rory didn't make a putt. I don't think
it was Rory missed putts is what the highlights were.
And then they showed Ricky putting on 10, and they showed two tee shots on 10. And like four or five minutes elapsed between when possibly one of the most pivotal moments in the entire tournament transpired, and they showed it canned, and they cut out the 40-second conversation between Spieth and Greller.
And this was after birdies on 8, birdie on 9, and then he birdied 12. And you hit the tee shot, and you know that there's a decision that's going to come here. It was evident. The decision to go to commercial, it's not, maybe they had to. Again, I don't know how that stuff works, but you got to know.
It wasn't a long commercial.
No, but you got to come back. You got to be ready for this moment that is coming up. It is the one of the best holes in golf with a former Masters champion, as much as like Augusta celebrates his former champions, and he's making the charge. He was 9 back to start the day, is making the charge. He was already 6 under on the day. And he's about to hit the shot into 13, and you whiffed it. Like, you totally whiffed it.
So here's where I'm at.
It's inexcusable.
I don't even care that I get what you guys are saying with the timing of it and delaying it and all that stuff. Yeah. I don't even
if it's canned.
I don't even care about that because we are a special kind of like weird golf nut that has it on the iPad and watching on Twitter and doing all this stuff. The vast, vast, vast majority of people are not doing that. So show it in whatever order you want. Just tell the story. What's inexcusable is not. A, showing a replay of probably the best shot of the tournament. B, not going back and say, this is what happened before he hit that shot. That's pretty bad. I mean,
the conversation was awesome.
That's pretty inexcusable.
It was good. He was talking about 4-iron,
probably one of the best top 2 or 3 caddy player conversations of the year.
Greller says, I think it's hybrid, and Spieth's like, I think I have to hit it a groove low. They pick up their start line.
Talking about the wind. They're talking about.
Yeah. It was just catnip to.
Oh, it was everything. Can we talk about Spieth birdied 13 all 4 days, birdied 15 all 4 days? He played the par fives 12 under this week.
God, he should have won.
So he didn't. Did he not? What did he do on 2 and 8?
He played 2-1 under, and he eagled 8. He played 8-3 under.
Crazy.
That's amazing.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Wild, but yeah, it, among other things, man, I mean, it's just like Faldo, it's at no point, and I know I said this on the live show, at no point did I feel like I was listening to somebody that had won the Masters three times, much less had ever played this golf course. I mean, how is he talking about Imagine Dragons coming up 18 fairway? Like, you have been in this scenario. You've
three
won.
Times.
You've won coming up this hole. Like, give me something, man. I mean, like.
Well, so he kind of, I don't know, I've made a point to you guys while we were sitting here that Nance kind of like pressed it, like I think
kind of coaxed him.
Yeah,
into,
like I don't think we're the only people that have been having this thought. Like I think it almost seemed like production kind of nudged him and was like, "Hey, man, like you know, you maybe you're going through the motions. Like, give us some insight." Because Nance kept pressing him on, you know, oh, you know, this is going to be a really hard shot coming up. What makes it so hard? And Nance, to his credit, did a really good job of that. I think they kind of it kind of went away later in the round, maybe, but at least it looked like they were giving it a shot.
They were conscientious of it.
Yeah, so hopefully that, I don't know, it's a long season. Hopefully that continues, but we'll
see. So one positive, like the eighth hole, eighth tee, Ian Baker Finch is like, all right, this bunker, he's trying to play this as close to this eighth bunker to increase his angle into eight green. I was like, wow, I shouldn't be surprised by this, but that was like, so on a shot-by-shot basis, that's what makes Augusta great. It's like, it's all about playing to the right angles and the right positions and whatnot, and that shouldn't be some, like a rarity in a broadcast. It's like you got to inform your viewers. I know it's a casual audience viewing into the Masters, and it's fluff, and it's, you know, roses and azaleas, and everything's wonderful with music. But
and as far as Augusta goes, that's one of the few places on the course these days where talk about the setup and everything, where there's actually a reward for playing to an angle and playing close to a bunker and playing it as McKenzie intended instead of whatever this is these days.
After a tee shot, don't say like, oh, he's fine there. It's like, all right, yeah, it's in the fairway, but he's on the wrong side of it. Like, tell us, like, is that ideal position or is that, you know, acceptable position? Let us know, like, what the considerations are that go on a shot-by-shot basis. I hate the default, especially with wide fairways, the default to being like, oh, he's just fine there. Oh, it's, you know, he can get a club on that. Okay, but, like, these are professionals. Like, they're trying to do things with the ball.
And I feel like Costas does it on 15 a little bit.
Yeah,
But it's just because I think part of it, though, is too, is, like, rational. Like, there's trees there, and he physically can't
get out
of the pin. Well, and that, good example of that. I don't really remember what they said, but, like, where Reed laid up to on 15 was just awesome. I mean, that was, like, that's, like, a cool spot where it's, like, you know, when he punches it through, it's almost like, oh man, he like pulled it. It's going left, but it's like, no. Well, he's trying to hit it there because it's flat.
He could have easily
got a good angle. He's got, you know,
punched it with a hook around the trees.
Exactly.
He did that 11 too.
Yeah,
he
and hit, it's cool. Yeah. You know, that kind of stuff is cool. Yeah, 11 was the same thing. Mm-hmm. Randy, I know. Like, we probably even watch. We watch much more golf. You've been kind of deep in the high school basketball scene for a while. It's probably your first kind of big 4-day telecast for a while. What were your impressions?
Yeah. Well, I'll echo your thoughts that you've just laid out. I think what's most, I guess, frustrating, I just don't get it, is they have the pro, I'm going to go a little bit different direction, but they have this pro tracer technology, and you get it on some holes.
First year they've used it at Augusta, right?
Yes,
correct. Yeah.
So you'd think they'd be really keen to
if there was a tournament where they could truly have it on every tee box, you would figure this would be the tournament. And so you just get so many of these shots where you're behind the player, they're teeing off, and you can't pick up the ball off impact. And so it's like, okay, cool, like, you know, you're guessing as to the swing and the reaction, and then they pick up the ball in flight, and, you know.
Or they don't pick up the ball in flight.
Or they don't. And it's just like, you know, okay, right? Like, I saw the swing and I saw where it landed. I just feel like it could just be better. I don't know. It's frustrating. It's
look at the Pro Tracer on Spieth's drive on 18 today. Like, we saw it go left. We all, I mean, mm-hmm. Pro Tracer adds, and we talk about this is like the 50th time I've said this on this podcast, how much it adds to the viewer experience.
Just adds in terms context.
Of your level of excitement to, you don't know what you're watching otherwise, like on a
shot. That's what I was going to say is the problem with it is it kind of ruins the golf shots where it's not on.
Right.
You just get so used to seeing it that, like, that was your problem, Randy. I forget what hole it was, like 14 maybe, where they didn't have it. Right. And, you know, we're so used to watching these guys hit it, and then you see one without, and you're like, where the hell is the ball going?
Right.
You know, it almost amplifies.
But just,
you know, it amplifies when it's not there, which is kind of a weird situation.
You know, people get on us for bitching too much about CBS. Like, the next major is going to have Pro Tracer on all of them.
Yeah.
Like, it can be done. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that for a myriad of reasons is, you know, CBS contracts, all that bullshit is why it doesn't happen.
We're talking about billion-dollar contracts here, too.
Like, You can invest billion in with shit. A B. Yeah.
My last just quick point is it for some reason it didn't feel like other Masters telecasts.
I agree. I don't know if it was the commercials. I don't know if, yeah. what it was, but it just...
No
just,
Joe Ford.
Just no Joe Ford.
Yeah, so the commercial front, I think, A, I want to give a shout out to Masters.com.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think just watching that, especially the first 2 days and yeah. with some of the featured group. Oh, we had some qualms with some of the featured group picks or, you know, not like ejecting from certain groups or whatever, but that telecast is second to none. I mean, those guys just...
Yeah.
kind of get out of the way. Davis Love III was good. Everybody on that telecast was good. Andrew Catalan was whatever. But I feel like on the weekend, there was a lot more commercial breaks. The commercials didn't necessarily add up to more time spent in commercial. So it was, you know, but it was so much more chopped up. You had
the flow.
You had little 20, 30 second commercials every 10 minutes.
That's and what a lot the of the same commercials. That's yeah. what kills you.
Totally.
But like it left me yearning for the Mickelson,
the Exxon
science, you know, Academy. Art, yeah, Science Academy. You know, the Phil and Amy yeah. Academy.
We missed this that during the Spieth shot on 13, one of the commercials was the AT&T Spieth laying up commercial.
Well, it was that one, and then when he missed the short putt on 18, it was the no gimmies commercial.
Right.
It's like that was a really weird
but the
piece of copywriting.
The most ironic
the
part
team.
About the whole laying up commercial was the slogan is "It can wait," and they're like, "Yeah,
it will wait."
Yeah, it will wait. We're refusing to show you this for another 5 minutes, even though it's already happened.
AT&T's phrase is "It can wait," and CBS's "It will." Yeah, wait. I love it. Masters.com. The functionality of that was amazing.
Seamless.
You could flip so quick between browsers. There was
and
no
just never buffering. Never.
No.
Yeah, it was really good.
Oh man, for 1 week a year, those guys. They crush the technology aspect to a level that is kind of, is incomprehensible.
DJ, I think you had some takes on Vern.
Oh no,
I thought we were past this, but well, look, I said this I think on the live show. I feel like a bit like Stephen A. Smith, kind of setting this up. You know, no one respects Vern more than me.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm.
However,
Vern was trash. No. No, he just I think once it clicked in my head, and this is going to sound kind of stupid probably, but once it clicked in my head that all he's doing is just basically like stating very literal facts, which I know is kind of what all, you know, play-by-play is, but it's like here comes Cameron Smith and he hits it to 12 feet.
He's from Australia.
And he's from Australia. And now here comes Justin Thomas walking to the green.
That one's short.
That one is short. It almost sounded like a video game version, like a soundboard from like you know, like an internet soundboard from like 2004 where you click and, you know, there's all the different buttons that correspond with different phrases. It was like, it was a little tough.
The scoreboard
there wasn't
pops
much.
Up.
Yeah, there was
like,
there was
he did
much.
Stay out of the way when Spieth hit the putt on 16.
Right, yeah. Which... So that's one of those like misguided compliments, I feel like, where, yeah,
for sure,
you know, oh God, I love that guy because he just doesn't say anything. It's like, well, that's not that hard. Like,
but would I rather have somebody like Vern versus somebody like Faldo?
Totally.
100%.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree.
Because Faldo's just mumbling all over every caddy player convo.
But Vern is almost like, you know, I think he kind of gets, it's kind of the whole CBS thing, and maybe this is a commentary on it. Not really evolving in, you know, 30 years. But these guys have all kind of become a little bit of kind of caricatures of themselves, I feel like. Maybe with, you know, Costas is probably the exception to that. But, you know, a lot of the times it's these guys like almost feel like they're
Nobolo too.
Yeah, and Nobolo too. Good call. But they almost kind of feel like they're playing the role of themselves in these things. And it's just really, it's really annoying, you know. People kind of, I think, tab Vern is like, oh man, it's great to have Vern in there. It's like, well, you're kind of pining for like because you've watched 86 Masters too much or something.
His voice is stellar though.
Yeah, his voice is totally, but it's all built for the one moment. Where, oh God, like, and that's cool.
Your life.
But that is the big time exception to the rule, I would say.
We're getting a little.
I feel like Augusta.
We're getting all sweaty now.
That's kind of a. Analogy for Augusta in general. too.
Yeah, I agree.
It's becoming a little caricature of itself.
So we were there on Wednesday. Does that kind of fit into what we were feeling? I know we kind of laid out some takes on the podcast last week about, you know, attending the tournament and all that kind of stuff. I mean,
I had a write up on the website.
Randy, what'd you think, bud?
It's great to be back. Pretty nice grounds.
Patron Randy.
Yeah.
Benevolent Randy.
I was the ticket provider. It's just really fun to walk around. I mean, it's one of those things, and I've said this before, and my favorite thing about going there is they don't gouge you, right? Free parking. Once you get in the gates, it's, you know, cheap concessions. It's just really refreshing. But, you know, I think we went on Wednesday, so we were driving back from Chattanooga, so it kind of broke up our drive, which was nice. It was we went over to the par 3 area for a little bit.
The original course.
Didn't hang out there too long, though. I think, you know, I don't like being around that many people anyway. But it's just really, it's cool just to walk the course. And
well, that's why I think Wednesday's the play, because they close it.
Right.
They close it for the par 3 contest at whatever it is, 12:30 or 1 or something. And mm-hmm. You just got basically like the most famous golf course in the world to yourself, it feels like. When you're walking around, you look at all the different holes and the greens, and it's just awesome.
We were with Mr. Loco, Zach Blair, well.
Yeah, who's stroking out at some of the green complexes.
Yeah.
And
yeah, so it was such a privilege to, you know, get his thoughts on you know, not only architecture, but how to play different shots and kind of what he sees and is looking at. And also a big shout out to the weather. It was
it was postcard.
Perfect. You know, nice breeze, very comfortable in kind of a quarter zip or long sleeves on top.
Shop.nolegup.com.
Yeah. No, it was just, you know.
Store.nolegup.com.
It was fun. It was a great day. I don't know. Do you guys have anything else you want to add? Or
it was good to just get it fresh. The last time I was there was 2012 with you, and it just, that's 6 years is a long time. Get it, the images fresh in your head of what those shots look like. And it is such a cool, special place that, you know, we spent a lot of time in the podcast leading up to it talking, kind of nitpicking on the things that are not great about Augusta, but it is a golf course that is just the history behind it, and learning all behind it about the history is kind of elevates its status in my eyes. So to get the grounds, a special day to kind of walk it and see it and smell it, as weird as that sounds, but just kind of get the senses and the sight lines and stuff, it was great. It's better that to me to do that than like actually watch the golf there, I think. So
yeah, I agree.
It's a rare golf course.
I don't know. I've never been there on a Sunday. I've been there during like tournament days and stuff. And I mean, for me, there's nowhere better to be than, you know, out there on Wednesday when you have the place to yourself and you can look around. But on Sunday, like ordinarily the telecast is so good and covers everybody that like I don't know why you'd ever want to be on site on Sunday.
I agree.
Yeah, I'm with you there. All right, we are running a little bit past an hour here. Anything major that we missed? Anything that you guys are pending on coverage here? Bit of a shout out. Was it possibly Freddie Couples' last Masters? I've heard some like people alluding
many
to that.
Many people are saying
that the back is in really, really bad shape and he hasn't played since January.
I think that would be the whole like Fred Couples giant like feature on CBS was, I'm sure, I don't know, I didn't really watch it, I'm sure it was fine, but it seemed kind of misplaced if it wasn't his last Masters. Like, yeah, kind of
Freddie
random.
Can never make up his mind on anything though, right?
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah. Shout out to Curtis Strange, who dropped a sauce reference on ESPN broadcast at the Masters after learning what tour sauce was a couple weeks ago. That was fantastic. Also friend of the pod, Marco Mira, last Masters. Shout out to him for a stellar career at this event. We didn't talk much about Finau. We covered that a lot in the live show, but he finished tied for 10th after dislocating his ankle.
Yeah, like, big comeback today. I was impressed. Stellar.
I think Randy's kind of a truther on that front.
I don't get how he was walking without a limb.
Yeah, you had some, you know, jet fuel doesn't melt ankle ligaments takes going on.
Well, it just doesn't make sense. I don't get it, but yeah.
I think it was pretty magnanimous of Nike to not
make him
force
wear the
him to wear the whatever color that was today.
Which what a weird thing that was, that Rory and Reed were in the same group wearing the same shirt. Like, that
not
can't
good.
be a good strategy.
What a weird way to force yourself into the narrative.
Yeah. You had kind of a truth or theory that that's why Rory kept the...
he had his pullover on, zipped all the way up.
That could have been what...
That's what held him back.
Constricting.
We got a little warm out there. I mean, I'm sure he would have loved to have taken that thing off.
Makes you think? And Kat didn't wear it either.
I don't know if KFS did either. It might have been like waves. They may have done like morning guys are wearing something. I don't know. I honestly don't know how it works.
Scripting sucks. God, it's terrible. Period. Point blank.
Guys should be able to wear whatever they want, whenever they want.
I do have to chug a monster. I lost the bet to Bacon.
No, I'm sorry. You have to shotgun a monster.
I have to shotgun a monster. That's going to
come. That's a big can.
Man. Oh, I know.
You shouldn't have lost.
I'm going to throw up, probably. It's going to come tomorrow.
Sick.
Is it like original flavor monster?
I think I'm allowed to choose the flavor of monster. But
you should make it one of those coffee monsters.
Oh, that's.
You should tweet at Big Cat for a recommendation.
Shout out to Monster for sponsoring the bet, even though they definitely didn't. But Rich Lerner, shout out to him for the apology of the week.
That was, I'm still kind of triggered by that. I don't think he should have caved.
Can you sum up what happened?
Well,
for the viewers at home?
I don't think he caved. I think the VPs at Golf Channel caved.
Yeah, it was probably came from higher up. Sergio made his 13 on the 15th, Firethorn. Rich, and I think DJ got off a nice little tweet in the same vein, but... Rich tweeted, you know, something, I don't know the exact wording, but something to the effect, he's not going to name his next kid Firethorn. And, you know, so innocuous. Like, and then Mrs. Garcia comes in hot the next day. It's like, Rich, you know, the next time you want to make fun of my family and my unborn child, don't. Like, don't be an idiot. And it's just like, geez.
Which almost makes you think like she was considering naming it Firethorn. And she like got, it was like a little too real.
I got to cross it off the list.
That'd be a pretty aggro name.
But it was just like, relax.
I would say name a kid Stinky Nandina. Shout out to Neil.
You're going to have to issue an apology tomorrow.
I'm sure that apology did, it was, the orders came from Rich on high.
So Rich came in with a classy apology.
So then Rich comes in, hey, you know, wasn't my intent. I'm sorry, missed the mark. You know,
what a great mic, like, look into the world.
And then,
golf.
So our DJ said the same thing.
I know, I felt bad after Jim I McCabe sent him, like, everybody's gonna make tweet. The same joke.
You felt bad, but Sally's, just because the
just from a comedy perspective,
yeah, exactly.
Sally's boy Doug Ferguson made the same joke. You know, I made a joke on Saturday after Rory hit it into the azaleas that he was gonna have to apologize for hitting it in the azaleas because that's what the current daughter's name is.
Yeah, a lot of people said a lot of stuff.
Hey, no regrets.
Yeah. We got Twitter questions?
YOLO.
We've covered a few of them. Best and worst dressed of the week, David Williams wants to know.
Everybody that wore Nike today?
Yeah.
It's not noticed.
Yeah.
Matsuyama the day dressed up as an Orlando Magic basketball player.
That was bad. Zach Johnson, the Target employee outfit was not good.
You know what? It may not be the best dressed, but I'm going to give him some... I'm going to praise progress here.
Okay.
Mark Leishman did not wear a white belt all week.
There you have it.
Big step.
Huge step in the right direction.
Not a fan of Spieth's hats.
Yeah,
the big square thing on the Under Armour thing.
This was the best that Spieth has looked wearing black in his career, though, thus far.
I think we're good on questions. Anything else burning for you guys before we shut her down? This is a long one.
I feel good.
There you have it.
I think it's time for the live show, or not the live, the travel series to start bucking its head this week.
Oh, tell us about it.
Well, I think we've mentioned it a couple times, but, you know, we took a trip to Australia a couple months ago, and we're going to spin that into the first season of the NLU travel series, Tourist Sauce. I think we're going to...
Driven
by BMW, thank you. And I think that we are going to maybe roll out a little bit of that content this week. Keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, as well.
That's
not to be repeated.
As well as thank you to everyone that bought towels this week. We sold out a couple weeks ago in 4 hours. We doubled our order and did some pre-orders for this and sold out in about 8 hours. So we're going to probably have to triple the order the next time around. But there are polos in the shop.
Polos
as well.
In the shop. We got rain gear going live this week.
Hats are back.
Hats are back this week.
A lot going on in the pro shop. So swing on by there. And in the meantime.
And it's a major week too.
Heritage.
DJ's playing Heritage.
Yeah.
Which is sweet.
Oh, nice. It's going
to
be awesome.
And we got Randy in the Kill House. Welcome.
Well, no, Randy's back to Ohio this week.
Well, essentially, he's planting his flag this week.
Yeah.
He'll be back soon.
Yeah, he'll be back.
All right, thanks for sticking with us this long, and hopefully have another podcast coming out later this week. In the meantime, signing off. Cheers.
Peace.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different.